Chapter 21. Salvation Lost. The convoy of tourist vehicles had reached the inner hatch that led into the occupied section of the Reach. Blenner, Wilder and their team stood guard by the vehicles. Gaunt had sent troops back from the college to collect the carry crates and begin the extraction of sensitive materials. Wilder was pacing. "Calm down," Blenner told him, but only because the pacing was making him feel more tense himself. They were exposed, literally right on the doorstep of the enemy holding. The smells of squalid decay and putrefaction coming out of the hatch were horrifying. He looked at Felix. The boy was standing by the tailboard of his vehicle, watching the dark cavities around them for movement. He was holding his weapon too tightly. Blenner tried to think of something encouraging to say, but he had used up all his banter on Perday and the ride in. The bang made them jump. The ground shuddered. Pressure shock popped their ears so hard, many of them cried out and dropped their guns. A second later, they felt the rush of hot wind come at them down the tunnel and smelled the grit and physoline.
"Damnation," said Blenner. "What just happened?"
Mert was lining up to take a shot when the ground shook. They all felt it. Pieces of junk trickled down from the roof. The distant boom came a second later, and then, like a feverish sigh, the rush of burned air. The team members looked at each other.
"Faith," said Wagner. "Somebody just got unlucky," said Dower.
It was like a grenade going off behind them. A violent tremor ripped through the floor, and a shockwave of noise, heat and pressurised air slammed through the chamber into them. Creed, Banda and Lair were all knocked over. Somehow Chiria kept her feet. They all knew what it was. They knew instantly. One of the other clearance teams had set something off. It was close by, too. Who? McTass's bunch? McCall's? It was the noise, the blink of annihilation that they had been dreading all day, the thing they had been braced for, the thing they had been yearning and willing not to happen. It hadn't happened to them. Someone else had got unlucky. It hadn't happened to them. But it might as well have done. McClake had been in the process of removing the firing pin from the floor mine they had finally exposed. Keeping his hand as still as possible, he had been lifting the pin he had unscrewed clear of the socket, slowly and cleanly, making sure no extra wires were attached. Creed was rolling her sleeve back down and putting her gloves back on. Banda was trying to flex life into her fingers and arms from holding the deck plate. He had been a millimetre or so away from lifting it clear when the blast wave hit them.
"McClick!"
Creed cried, getting up. McClake was prone on the deck, belly down, his face over the anti-tank mine. His hand was on the trigger pin, still holding it. The blast had made him touch it against the rim of the socket. He didn't dare move. He didn't dare break the contact.
"McClake!"
Creed repeated. She and the others moved towards him.
"Don't come any closer,"
he hissed, trying not to move.
"Don't come any closer. Run. Get the detachment running."
"Faith that," said Banda.
"I'm not kidding,"
McClake whispered, his eyes wide.
"Run, you stupid bastards. Run now. I think this has gone live. I think it's live and I can't hold it forever. Run."
"No way," Creed began.
"Run,"
McClake rasped. Almost a wail of desperation. They looked at each other.
"We can't,"
Creed began. Lair and Banda grabbed her and bundled her towards the passageway behind them. They started running. Chiria too, labouring with the weight of the flamer tank. The troop detachment saw them coming and needed no encouragement to turn and run as well. They fled down the tunnel full sprint. Lair and Banda had to virtually drag Creed. McClake held on for as long as he could. When his fingers finally began to give out, he lifted the pin away from the socket. Nothing.
"The Emperor protects,"
he murmured, tears of relief in his eyes. The tank mine exploded. They felt the detonation, rather than heard it. The copper flooring of the college hall shivered. The lamps rattled and stirred. Gaunt turned to look at McCall. And, as he did so, they both felt the pressure shift of air passing through the chamber. Gaunt could taste the heat and the dry stink of explosives.
"That was big," he said.
McCall didn't reply. He knew they'd just lost someone. A lot of people, probably. Perhaps that had been the sound of them losing the fight, the mission, and everything they'd come for.
Bonin came in. "That came up the tunnels," he said. "One of the disposals teams made a misstep."
"Which one?" asked Rowan. Bonin shook his head.
"If we felt it here," said Gaunt.
"Sir?"
Gaunt turned. With Varl guarding him, Mabon had gone over to one of the control panels wired into the wall of the college chamber. Behind a dingy glass panel, a strip of stained paper was scrolling through a chart recorder. 6 claw-like, spring-loaded arms leaving scratchy lines on the graph.
"It's a motion recorder," said Mabon. "They're commonplace. The Magiers and Etagors of the facility will have detected it."
They felt another smaller but definite thump through the ground. The graphing arms recorded a sudden and steep spike.
"Another one," said Gaunt.
"Available time just reduced considerably," said Mabon. "No matter what is happening on the main approach, your enemy will now be sending units to investigate."
Gaunt strode back to Rowan and McCall. "Strengthen the perimeter," he said. "I want to know the moment they arrive." Members of the troop detachment were bringing in the first of the empty carry boxes.
"Let's get those filled, quickly," said Gaunt.
He glanced back at Mabon.
"Take everything you can," said Mabon. "Papers, books, document cases, tubes, data slates. Use gloves. Seal the boxes when they're full."
"Don't sort," said Gaunt. "In fact, don't even look at what you're grabbing. The Inquisition can worry about decoding and understanding it all. We've just got to deliver. Pick it up, ship it out, move on to the next box. Anything you're not sure about, leave it, or ask me."
"Come on," said Domer, clapping his hands. "Grab and go."
Gaunt took an empty box, moved to some dirty metal shelves, and began to take the pamphlets and books off it. He could smell book mould and damp. Some of the page edges had stuck to the metal. He took each handful and packed it into the box, filling it neatly and efficiently, the way his father had taught him to pack a footlocker. He'd never imagined he'd be handling this sort of material. It was his imagination, no doubt, but his flesh tingled despite the gloves. What were they disturbing? How were they being contaminated? This stuff had power. This knowledge, this learning, it had a potency of its own. The books, the bindings, the materials used, the very words dictated through the warp by lisping, gleeful, inhuman voices. Under any other circumstances, they would have been burning the stuff. He moved to another rack, scroll cases. The tubes were made of the same nut-brown, glossy leather as the belts and straps of the Sons of Sek. He knew what it was. He kept packing anyway. The box was full. He closed the lid, secured it with the straps, and turned to hand it off in exchange for a fresh one. Felix Chass was offering him the empty box.
"What are you doing here?"
Gaunt asked, biting back his alarm and managing to keep his voice low.
"Following orders, sir," said Felix.
"What orders?"
"Conveyance transport duty, sir," the boy said. His face was pale.
"Take this crate back to the transports. Load it securely. Come back for another one," said Gaunt.
"Yes, sir."
"Are you all right?"
Felix nodded.
"In duty we find true fulfilment, sir."
"That's Ravenor," said Gaunt.
"I took the liberty of reading some," said Felix.
Gaunt handed the sealed crate over.
"Get moving," he said. "We've got to go quickly."
Felix hurried towards the exit with the box. Gaunt picked up the empty carton he'd left behind.
"You look troubled," said Mabon.
Gaunt turned. Mabon had wandered over to him. Varl and the other Suicide Kings were busy packing boxes and watching the outer exits. "This is a precarious situation," said Gaunt. "We're prepared for so long and invested such effort. And now we're here. I'm not sure it's worth it. We're stealing secrets that we don't want to hear and laying the blame on another."
"I see," said Mabon. "I thought you might just be worried about your son."
Gaunt narrowed his eyes.
"You leave him alone."
Mabon raised his chained wrists.
"I'm not in a position to do anything to anyone."
"How did you know?" Mabon's face was impassive.
"I hear things. I don't get much opportunity to do anything except listen. I am not regarded as human, Colonel Commissar. People talk around me as though I'm not there. They gossip to pass the time when they guard me. I could tell you all sorts of things about your ghosts. I choose not to, because it would be impertinent and inappropriate, and I have no desire to damage the fragile relationship between us. On this occasion, I was merely expressing concern for you, because I respect you."
Gaunt was silent. Then he nodded and began packing the second box. "I worry that we are tainting ourselves, just handling this material, bringing it back to the Armaduke."
"That is simple paranoia, sir," said Mabon. "Perfectly understandable. As I explained, the material in the college is inert. It is simply data. Oh, some of it is fairly unpleasant. Records of abominations, atrocities. But it is not toxic of itself. It can be handled and removed quite safely."
Gaunt began to put bundles of old data slates into the box.
"Would you like me to help?" asked Mabon.
"I'd prefer it if you didn't touch anything." Mabon nodded.
"There are," he said, "other areas, crypts and vaults not far from the colleges of Heritons, but kept separate, where true evil lurks. They contain artifacts and devices, books that need to be weighed down and chained, and which can only be read with surgically adapted eyes. Those are the things you need to avoid. Even the weapon rites and the servants of the Heritor treat those with care. The warp is in them. But the Imperium is so afraid of the influence of the ruinous powers, it chooses to ignore vast amounts of data like this. Data that is perfectly sound and reliable, and thus blinds itself to its enemy."
"I understand the brief," said Gaunt. "That's why I supported the proposal. That's why I volunteered my regiment. The removal and review of this material will give us insight into enemy operations that most likely will shift the course of the crusade. If we cripple this facility, we also deprive the arch-enemy of a vital resource. Even those two fine reasons are secondary to our goal," replied Mabon.
"Sir," Gaunt looked around. Sergeant Euler had found something. Gaunt and Mabon went over to him. Euler and two other ghosts, all of them with half-packed crates, were standing in the doorway of one of the college hall's annexes, a small circular room lined with wooden shelves. There was a brass display case and analysis console in the centre of the floor.
"These aren't books, sir," said Euler. "Do we take them too?"
Gaunt looked around the shelves. There were small objects everywhere, individually boxed in wooden frames or stoppered in specimen flasks, like catalogued museum items. Small icons, pieces of technology, idols, figurines, amulets, strange items of jewellery, ritual athemes, wands and beakers, playing cards, samples of powders and compounds, fragments of bone and fossil, pots of liquid. Gaunt saw a few old imperial medals, a broken aquila, an inquisitorial rosette, some pieces of augmetic and imperial tech that he could not identify. He saw items that seemed unmistakably Eldar in origin, and the blunt teeth and fetishes of greenskins.
"Do we take this?" he asked the prisoner.
"Take it all, if it's portable," said Mabon. "A great deal of the material here comes from salvage efforts in the Reach. The weapon rights plunder the debris field,
harvesting material from 1,000 cultures and 1 billion years. There are several more side chambers like this. Strip them all, along with the written material.
Do it, said Gaunt. Euler and his men started to clear the shelves.
Mabon had crossed to the central display stand.
Look here, he said.
Gaunt went over to him.
Inside the glass-topped case lay 8 damaged stone tablets. Each one was about the size of a data slate, and they had been cut from a heavy, gleaming red rock. All of the tablets were chipped, and one had a significant piece missing. They were covered with inscribed markings, a language that Gaunt had never seen before.
"These are important," said Mabon. "We must take them."
"Why?"
"I remember them being brought in years ago. They were found at another site, one of the Karn worlds, I believe. Xenos script, very old. The weapon rights were very taken with them. They considered them to be important. They described them as Glyptothek, a library in stone."
"Then we'll take them for Imperial Seventh to study," said Gaunt.
"Good," said Mabon.
"Look where they are."
"In that case, you mean, they are being studied, see? The analysis devices, the transcriber. This alcove was the workplace of a senior weapon wright, a Magyar Hapteka. He was concentrating his studies on this."
"Your point?"
"Think about it. These objects were brought in years ago and were considered significant then. They are still under close and detailed examination. They are important."
Mabon looked at Gaunt. His eyes were fierce.
"Your emperor must be with us today. Your emperor or your beati, in the act of undertaking this mission. He has led us to a discovery of singular value."
"Maybe," said Gaunt. "I'm not convinced. But we'll remove them too." He nodded to Euler, who opened the case and packed the stones into his crate one by one. Gaunt watched for a moment, and then went to the analysis console. It was a battered but recognisable Imperial cogitator. Gaunt pulled out his data slate and connected it to the console's memory socket. He began to export the console's archived data. The screen of the slate flickered as information flowed into it. He'd almost finished when the first shots rang out at the far end of the college precinct. A few single blasts at first, then sustained fire. McCall appeared in the doorway of the annex.
"Sons of Sec, full order, 8 companies, moving this way to secure the college," he said.
Gaunt drew his bolt pistol.
"Deny them," he said.
Baskerville lobbed a grenade around the hatch and stood aside. There was a hard bang, and 2 cult fighters were thrown headlong into the open in a spurt of debris and smoke. Baskerville swung back into the doorway and fired his las rifle into the smoke. He spitted 2 other cult fighters, dazed and bloody from the grenade, and cut them down before they could react. On the far side of the hatch was a machine bay and a loading ramp. Baskerville killed another fighter on his way down, and then came under fire from a fire team of Suns. Gansky's squad was moving up to his left. They covered the fire team with rifle fire and drove them back from behind a row of punctured, dented fuel drums. Baskerville reached for another grenade and realised he'd just used his last.
"Flamer!"
he yelled.
"Waiting for refill tanks, sir,"
Kars shouted back.
"Damn!"
Baskerville muttered. They'd advanced hard and fast behind the Space Marine assault, but the arch-enemy forces had native knowledge of the facility's layout and kept striking at them from the flanks, weaving their way through the complex and cluttered geography of the depots and engineering spaces. The Sons of Sec had laced Salvation's Reach with sally ports, false walls, blind hatches and artificial dead ends. The junk architecture of the ramshackle site was working to the enemy's advantage, allowing them to sidestep, double back and ambush. It was costing the Tanith First men, and the munition expenditure was immense. Baskerville didn't think they'd ever lit off so much firepower in such a short space of time. The lighters had just jockeyed back in with a second ammunition restock. The Sun's fire team had found new cover and was firing at a steady rate. Baskerville hoped they didn't have any grenades or fresh throwing arms,
A sudden burst of lasfire split the air from above. Baskerville glanced up to see that Dallin's squad had found a way up onto a raised gantry. They had an almost unobstructed view of the sun's position and were making best use of it. Nine of the sons of Sec died where they stood. Two more broke and ran, and Baskerville's squad knocked them flat. In the middle distance, a series of hefty explosions tore across the compartment, knocking down several cargo lift gantries. Brother Sergeant Edwine and his weapon servitors had finally vanquished and destroyed a grotesque and ugly war construct, something that scuttled along on black wire like an arachnid as it fired its belly-slung las cannons. Baskerville heard some of the Vervunhivers describe it as a woe machine. It wasn't the first one they'd seen that day, and the Vervunhivers claimed it was like a small version of the constructs they'd fought during the Zoican War. Huge flames sprayed up from the dying machine, scorching the compartment roof. Edwine was already moving on. From his position, Baskerville could see the white scar fighting his way forwards, but he'd lost track of the iron snake. Kalia's company began moving up alongside him. They'd brought fresh rockets and grenades with them, and at least four re-tanked flamers. A shout went up. Two more large war machines had rattled into view, supported by light stock tanks and a detachment of Sons of Sec. They had come in through a bulk hatch from a derelict hangar and were punching the ghosts back with the speed of their strike. Kalia and Baskerville called their tread feathers up and began to advance through the jumbled yards of the machine shop to get a better angle in the deadly constructs. Baskerville could hear the chugging crack and whicker of the heavy guns. Something was on fire, weeping a curtain of thick black smoke across the yards. Dallin's squad switched to dealing with an enemy sniper who was taking pot shots over the line of advance. Kalia and Baskerville reached an archway, hoping it would give them a good shot at the war machines, but the sound of heavy gunfire had stopped. There was no sign of the lumbering machines or their support.
"Where have they gone?" asked Kalia.
Several runners arrived, bringing reports of a significant fall away in the enemy resistance. Sons of Sec units had been seen breaking off and retreating.
"Could they have been pulled back deliberately?" asked Baskerville. "Redirected."
Kalia looked at him. He didn't like where Basque was going.
"I think it's possible they've just discovered they've got a more vital problem to deal with," Baskerville said, with a shrug. "How would they know that?" asked Kalia. "Sensors, detectors, plain bad luck," Baskerville suggested. "Maybe Gaunt's forces have got right inside and it's kicked off. We can't know."
"If they know what we're doing," murmured Kalia, "they know we're just the sound and fury. They'll know what's really at stake."
He called to the nearest runner.
"Get to a vox," he said. "Signal the Armaduke. Message reads, enemy may be aware of the secondary strike forces. Strike Beta and Strike Gamma must, repeat, must make ready for serious assault. The enemy knows what the target is. Got that?"
"Yes, Major."
"Then run!"
The Sons of Sec threw themselves at the College of Heritance. They came up in squads, a dozen strong, armed with las rifles and hell guns. Officers carried long, curved swords. They advanced out of the maze of inner tunnels and chambers that made up the Reach facility and fired rifle grenades at the doors and windows of the college to unseat the Imperial force. Stained glass exploded in glittering fragments. Fire took hold of ancient benches and shelving. Lamps fluttered and went out. Under Gaunt's direction, the Strike Beta detachment used what cover they could. The bulkheads and shelves, the annexes, the heavier metal desks and benches, and set up resistance fire. Sun's officers, yelling in brisk, curt accents, sent howling cult fighters forwards, ahead of the battle troops to soak up the fire. The bodies of these poor wretches began to pile up around the outer steps and hatchways of the college precinct. Well back from the fighting line, Mabon watched grimly. They were exactly the tactics he would have employed.
"How much longer?" Gaunt asked Blenner.
His old friend paused, lugging a carry crate that he was taking back to the transports.
"How long is an Imperial Crusade?" he replied. "We've cleared a little over half the rooms.
Quite a quantity of stuff. If we gather too much more, we'll have to send back for more transports. Keep going for now, said Gaunt. Get as much as you can.
Maybe 2 dozen or so crates before the last Taurus is full, said Welder.
Good. Do it, said Gaunt.
Could we not just leave? Asked Glenner.
Leaving sounds like a wise tactical move.
Like bringing my son here? Asked Gaunt. Glenner snorted and started emptying another case of shelves into a fresh crate. Gaunt moved forwards into the part of the college where the fighting had intensified. He passed Colding, who was patching up 3 ghosts caught in the opening gunplay. He saw Ezra ap Nit.
"Hist ye," Gaunt said. "Watch over my son."
Ezra nodded and melted into the shadows. Gaunt heard ugly animal noises over the heavy gunfire ahead of him. He ducked in beside Varl.
"What is that?" he asked.
"Fifth nose," Varl replied, slapping in a fresh cell. "They're bringing things in. Animals, like packs of dogs on leashes, but..."
"But what?"
"I think they made them, sir. I think they sewed these things together, stitched them from parts of different creatures, and humans."
Mabon had mentioned a fascination with surgical and genetic experimentation among some of the Reach's weaponrites. Something was scratching and pawing at the doors and hatches. Gaunt could hear claws and hoofs. He could hear whining voices and throbbing growls. He could hear human mouths making pitiful animal sounds. Part of a wall blew in. Sons of Sek charged at them through the smoke, scrambling over the rubble, trying to capitalize on the hole they'd made. Gaunt got up to meet them, scything his power sword around, taking off a head. He blew another son off his feet with a bolt round, painting the rubble and the ceiling with blood from the detonation. Varl was beside him, shooting point-blank and stabbing with his bayonet. In a second, 2 more Suicide Kings, Cardass and Nomis, had reached them, firing single shots at selected targets. Gaunt ripped in with his sword, carving a path through the troops to face the officer, a massive brute with a power axe.
"Drive them back! Plug the hole!" Gaunt yelled.
Varl was too busy taking headshots to make a sarcastic reply. Gaunt reached the officer. The axe swept at him, but he blocked it with his sword and levered the arch-enemy warrior back a step or two. Gaunt had to duck the next chopping swing. He struck with the sword, ripping open the officer's left thigh. Then, as the officer lurched forwards in pain at the injury, he tore his torso open with a massive upswing cut. 20 metres away through the smoke, Ezra bundled Meritus Felix Chass away from the breach. Felix tried to shake off the firm grip of the mysterious heathen. He could see his father, the fabled people's hero, the man he had heard stories about since he was old enough to understand them. He could see him fighting, outnumbered, a determined blur with gleaming sword, spraying the walls with blood, cutting and slicing. Felix watched for a second, wide-eyed. He realised that, when all was said and done, there was precious little difference between being a hero of the people of the Imperium and being a ruthless, brutal killing machine. To be the former, one had to accept much of the role of the latter.
"Come, soul," Ezra whispered.
"I need to help,"
Felix began, pulling away and trying to get his las rifle off his shoulder. Ezra didn't reply. He picked Felix up as if he were one of the carry crates ready for removal, and strode towards the exit. Varl switched to full auto, smacking 2 sons and 2 cult fighters back out of the breach. Their bodies fell across the dust-swirled rubble. Cardass tossed a grenade out through the gap that exploded amongst the enemy squads, still trying to force their way in. Gaunt joined Varl and Nomis at the top of the rubble, firing out into the smoke and darkness.
"Bayonet bloody?" Ron joined them.
"Our options are limited," he said. "Our position here is narrow, just the hall area. They're coming at us on 3 sides. We can't overlap fire or lay down anything to protect the right flank."
"Those windows?" asked Gaunt.
"Too high," said Ron.
"Get ready to pull out then," said Gaunt.
"I don't think we'll be staying here much longer."
"If we stay much longer, it'll be permanent," said Ron.
A cry went up outside the college wall. A huge force of sons bayonet charged the main hatch, firing as they came.
The ghosts, barricading the main door and the side annexes, were driven back, heads down. A storm of las bolts tore through the hatchway and ripped apart benches and consoles. Gaunt saw two ghosts cut down. He cursed. Their grip on the college precinct, tenuous to begin with, had slipped entirely. The Sons of Sek were upon them so tightly there wasn't even a possibility of disengaging. Wagner beckoned them on. The tunnel network Dower's clearance team had penetrated was a jumble mix of stonework and rusted metal.
"Can you hear that?" asked Wagner.
They stopped and listened, weapons ready.
"Fighting,"
said Mert. Dower nodded. Through the thickness of stone and compressed void junk ahead, they could hear the sounds of a serious firefight. Salvos of gunfire, las weapons, grenade bursts.
"I think someone's got there first," said Haller. He grinned. "Should we lend them a hand?"
Dower wiped his mouth, thinking hard. Hark and the troop detachment hadn't yet caught up with his team. What good could the five of them do, even with a flamer?
Some good, he decided.
Maybe just enough. The biggest fight often turned on the smallest margin. They'd go in. Hart couldn't be that far behind. Wagner brought his rifle up. Something was moving ahead of them. Something was skittering in and out of the rubble and junk piles that filled their path. It was getting closer. The something lurched into view. It bounded towards them with a long, loping gait. It was a dog, a big hound of some sort. A bloodhound, perhaps. Its tan coat was shaved very short, and it wore a thick, spiked collar. It stopped and stared at them. It sniffed, drool leaking from its loose black lips. Its coat was not short. It had no coat. Now they saw it properly, they realised it was just bare flesh. There were suture marks around the spine and some of the major muscle groups. It was skeletally canine, but a human skull, with face attached, had been grafted onto the thick neck. Its eyes were white and dead. It whined. Wagner killed it.
"What the sacred faith was that?" he asked Dower.
Wagner's blood spattered Dower's face. The scout fell backwards, dead, his head destroyed by a las round. Sons of Sek came out of the darkness past the body of their slain creature. There were a dozen of them, firing rifles and pistols. Haller dropped his sweeper and reached for his rifle. A shot clipped his shoulder and threw him into the wall. Dower returned fire, cutting down two of the attackers with a fierce burst. Mert fired almost instinctively, crippling a son with a saline charge he had loaded. A second later, he felt searing pain. A sledgehammer of momentum hit him in the chest and knocked him over.
"Get back!" Belloc yelled. "Get him back!"
His flamer gouted a spear of flame down the passage, torching one of the sons. The man lit up and ran, consumed with white flames into the passageway wall. Belloc fired again, filling the passageway with a hot orange light. A shot blew his throat out in a spray of blood. He staggered backwards, and a round went into his chest, another into his hip, and a final one into his eye. He fell on his back, his flamer gasping and flaring spurts of untrained fire. Haller got up, bleeding, firing his last pistol.
"Get Mert!" Dower yelled. "Get Mert! Drag him back!"
Mert was staring at the ceiling, his eyes wide, his augmetic jaw opening and closing uselessly. His chest was a bloody mess.
"Get him!"
Dower yelled. He turned to fire again, and las rounds found him too.